PayPal mafia, which have their tendrils deeply embedded in both parties. You may have Peter Thiel and Republican, but you'll have Reid Hoffman and Pierre Omidyar on the Democrat side, for example. And then Elon Musk also now on the Republican side. But really, you know, these are people that build de facto monopolies in direct connection with the U.S. national security state. And if you look at Palantir, it's very clear they care very little about our constitutional rights and freedoms. And despite perhaps, you know, the rhetoric they may espouse publicly. And, you know, it's very unfortunate that so many people believe with how they frame themselves rhetorically, because it goes very against their actions. You know, for example, Peter Thiel is often referred to by others as a libertarian, but this is someone who says that he doesn't like free market competition because competition can negatively impact profits and openly promotes the idea of, you know, quartering a market and building a monopoly. And when he's done that, which he has, he's done it in direct collaboration from the very beginning with the U.S. national security state. So I would not call that libertarian. I think it's quite clearly fascist. Clear if you look at, you know, just American politicians in general over the last 100 years plus, they tend to serve their biggest donors, correct? And are influenced by their donors. And that's why, you know, follow the money has always been so important when you're reporting on political realities or political figures in the United States. And I think it's abundantly clear that J.D. Vance has those kind of very deep connections to Peter Thiel. And his political career and his venture capitalist career would not have existed if it were not for him. And it's also important to point out that after the vice presidential announcement, you have close allies of Peter Thiel, whether it's Elon Musk or David Sachs or Palmer Luckey or Palantir itself, a Palantir co-founder alongside Thiel named Joe Lonsdale, all beginning to dump millions of dollars per month in the same super PAC that's supporting the Trump-Vance ticket only after that VP announcement was made. So clearly there, it seems like that particular network is quite convinced that Vance is going to be their guy. When in office, and it's worth pointing out that a lot of these guys are very interested in dominating the digital financial system to come. For example, Elon Musk says that he plans to turn X Twitter into half of the financial system. And J.D. Vance has been on the Senate Banking Committee. He's involved in crypto regulation legislation that's being written and drafted. And going to be put before Congress. And it's very likely that he'll be involved in choosing the kingmakers of that, like, you know, PayPal's very own recently launched stablecoin and any of these others, you know, companies and currencies that they're, you know, intimately connected to. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have heard about the move into central bank digital currencies, for example, or CBDCs. And there's been a lot of criticism around those because of the idea of it being programmable, surveillable money. But for money to be programmable and surveillable, it doesn't necessarily have to be issued by a central bank. It can be also issued by the private sector. And you can add that same type of Orwellian surveillance you know, the concerns about programmability, deciding what you can or can't buy based on various metrics or, you know, based on your online activity or, you know, the claims of a coming social credit system and all of that. You can have that issued by the private sector, no problem. And so there's been efforts to sort of to make a digital dollar in the United States. And there's been concern that there would be a CBDC in the United States. And that's certainly been happening in other countries. But I think in the United States, it's increasingly unlikely, especially considering that, you know, the Federal Reserve in the United States is essentially owned by the private Wall Street banks. And if you're, you know, a central bank digital currency, then the central bank is doing a lot of the job that Wall Street banks normally do. And Wall Street banks want to keep the two-tier system of private banking and central banking as it exists today. So they're most likely to be the issuers of that currency. And I think PayPal, in some of my recent reporting on my website, Unlimited Hangout, have focused a lot on how there's efforts by these groups that own that you know, are either ex-PayPal or who currently own PayPal, to have PayPal and a lot of the companies that are intimately connected to it, for example, like Latin America's Mercado Libre, to be the rails on which all of these digital currencies will run and to essentially dominate the field. And it's very likely that PayPal's PYUSD is going to be a major contender in that. A lot of, you know, other dollar stablecoins maybe as well, like Tether, which was intimately tied up with the FTX scandal, or Circle, which has a very intimate relationship with Larry Fink's BlackRock. You know, any of these, but essentially which, you know, digital dollar coins are going to win. You know, that's not going to be all be determined by regulation legislation that's being written. And has to be approved first, right, by the Senate Banking Committee on which J.D. Vance sits. And so, you know, having these particular Silicon Valley figures all tied to PayPal influence him, I think, in that context is somewhat, you know, significant, because regulation determines the winners and the losers in the market that it's regulating, right? And so, you know, if the people writing the bill all have ties to the same you know, companies that want to be winners, they can be favored, you know, right, you know, at the legislative level, and, you know, have their, you know, work cut out for them essentially, and come to dominate the market. And, you know, PayPal has expressed for a long time they want to dominate the market. You have Peter Thiel on record saying that PayPal was created to replace the US dollar. So there's a lot of things happening here. And what you'd have, you know, as a consequence of that would be the people that run PayPal, who, you know, in recent years have just been censoring people for things they've written and stuff like that. You know, they're the ones that would be capable of programming and surveilling your money. And, you know, that's very unfortunate, especially when you consider the connections of, you know, someone like Piero Midyar, who owns PayPal right now, which I wrote about in press, you know, several years ago. And I know that Max Blumenthal also did an investigative series for Met Press on our Piero Midyar. That's very important. I would encourage people to look at those to learn more about the people that are essentially running this company. And also, you know, the other people that make up this particular network that is very connected to the so-called, you know, PayPal mafia, and really the PayPal co-founders. I mean, the intelligence ties abound. And I think it's a lot of them frame themselves as, you know, pro-constitution, pro-freedom and all of this. But, you know, a lot of their business decisions reflect something else entirely. And I think it's, you know, important to warn people about this.
I mean, knowing all of this, how do we even begin to explain this mass rallying by working class white Americans that support Trump and his campaign, despite them caring so much about civil liberties, freedom, and their amendment rights, as they say, while ignoring Trump's ties to the very establishment they claim to be against?
I think some of it might have to do with, you know, the other weekend's events, you know, the attempted shooting, things like that really rile people up. And I, you know, I think regardless of whether one thinks an event like that is inorganic or organic, it doesn't really matter. The powers that be at the end of the day, when the American public, or really the public of any nation, is very emotional and very riled up, they're more easy to manipulate. And you better believe that they make efforts to sort of use that emotional energy to nudge people in a particular direction. And so I think, you know, that's something people should consider there. And I think obviously, you know, that's going to, it seems like it's had the effect of sort of rallying people around Trump and making them, his supporters much more enthusiastic than they perhaps were before, about his candidacy. And I also think a major factor too, that we can't ignore, is the fact that Peter Thiel is a major funder of independent and alternative media. Not Mint Press, not me, definitely there's plenty of other journalists who are not funded by Peter Thiel, but a lot of the biggest names are. And, you know, for example, when Tucker Carlson went independent from Fox, he entered into talks relatively shortly thereafter with Peter Thiel, who was going to finance him. I'm not sure if that's confirmed or not, but it's definitely, you know, worth considering, especially since Tucker Carlson was one of the major people lobbying Trump to select J.D. Vance as his vice presidential candidate. And of course, Peter Thiel is a major investor in Rumble, which is an alternative to YouTube that tends to appeal mainly to right-leaning audiences. And a lot of the figures on there, the biggest names anyway, many of them are all in on this particular ticket, and, you know, receive some sort of financial compensation, you know, from Thiel funded Rumble to post their videos there. Obviously, that's not true for everyone that's in the contractual situation. For example, you know, Jimmy Dore recently had me on to talk about how awful Peter Thiel is for over an hour. But there certainly are people that I think aren't inclined to criticize him. I mean, he is a very powerful figure, and a lot of people in media, you know, unfortunately, are funded by him. And there's been sort of this increased, you know, effort to sort of, well, we've seen it for a long time, like with The Intercept, for example, and Piero Midyar sort of launching this sort of what was framed then as this dissident outlet. You know, these billionaires sort of coming out and framing themselves as the saviors of journalism. We've seen that more recently with Elon Musk and, you know, the Twitter files and his efforts asserts, you know, his claims of buying Twitter to turn it into a free speech platform, though I would argue that his motives are something else entirely. And he's essentially said that they're, you know, the main factors were something else. So he wants to bring back his original X.com, which is what he brought to PayPal back in the late 90s when he and Peter Thiel teamed up. He said he wants it to be half of the financial system. He wants to turn essentially what was Twitter into a bank. And his other ambition, I would argue, is to hoover up all the user data to train his AI. He has an AI company that produces the Grok chatbot, which is now integrated into Twitter and, of course, is a competitor, you know, to OpenAI's ChatGPT and all of that. But it can, you know, have unique access to all of that user data. I would argue it's for, you know, algorithmic trading, training, and other things as well. And then another one of his ambitions, as he said, is to verify all humans on the platform, which means linking your government-issued ID to your social media account, which is a part of this broader effort that includes PayPal and also the FBI and the Secret Service and Israeli intelligence to end online anonymity, specifically on social media networks, and prevent people from using an anonymous account.